In the last element of the sugya, there were two transitions, or two ways of conceiving the transition. One is we moved from the question of ancillary effects to the question of direct effects. We moved from, do I want this person to be here because of the side effects it has on me, to competition. Right? That's one way of framing it, right? But it's only the last case which moved to competition. The other is that we moved from opposing private goods, from the private, right? One member of the chatzer says, I don't want this. One member of the chatzer says, I do want this. Right? Who wins? To a public good. Right? Which way is it better for the community?
Just a clarification. We're talking about the transition from what to what?
The transition from the dialogue about the Mishnah to the dialogue between Rava and Rav Dimi about the two, right, about the two Milandim. So that, right, the easiest way of understanding that transition is that it's purely associative. We had a whole conversation about can you prevent a sofer, a Malame Tinoko, from setting up shops. Then we move to another case which also involves preventing a Malame Tinoko from setting up shop, but has no direct conceptual connection because the grounds are totally different. Again, right, in the first part we're talking about the private right of residence, in the second case we're talking about the public good of teaching. Right, so an ongoing question is going to be whether we in fact see that as a transition in the sugya, or we see that somehow this is all supposed to be continuously related to the Mishnah. One framing we should have is that you might expect that the proper law of the Mishnah, in other cases, should be settled by majority vote, which is one of the standard ways of handling a debate among Shvitim. All members of the Chatzer are partners, so they should decide by majority vote. It's interesting that in each case, right, that it, in the sugya to this point, we never looked at the Chatzer as a whole. Right? We never addressed the question of whether it might be, say, you don't want the noise, but we want access to the products. Right? And that would be a perfectly normal way of settling a partnership issue. Well, let's see how many of you want access to the goods and how many of you want, right, and how many of you are bothered by the noise. So it's interesting that to this point we never consider the public good. And the question is whether the transition to thinking about the public good then requires us to go back and say, have we missed something in our entire analysis this far? Okay, yes, Joshua, then Yish.
My other point is that it could be beneficial to other people with other businesses to have other people coming in for other businesses.
Right, so it might not be that you want access to the goods, it might be that you want to set up a strip mall.
Yeah.
Right, in your chatzer, because you think that will attract lots of businesses. Okay, yes, Yish.
So I thought about that, about why such a thing. I thought it could be that you're not... that this is talking about the right, meaning if I have the legal right to something, so I can exert that right even if I'm a minority of one. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Yerushalmi's and Peah.
Okay.
We talk about if I'm giving
it's
out Mishnah. I don't think it's a Mishnah, but it could be a Mishnah. If I'm giving out a Peah to Aniyim,
mm-hmm.
So there are certain ways to do it at certain times, and if everyone agrees, so we can change things. But if
right.
even one person protests, since the status quo din is like him, so he can stop the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it might not matter about the majority. If the status quo is that, you know, this will help 100 people in the chatzer, but one of them is going to lose his beauty sleep, so since the status quo din is like him, he can block everything.
Good. So now we're going to have a big transition moment. Okay? It's a choice. You're right. We can decide to say that the status quo is in that way, and we can decide to leave the status quo that way, or we can decide to make a choice halakhically not to let the status quo because we think the public good overrides. Who is we? The makers of halakha.
Okay.
Right. That's what I want. Right. That's like I want to get to be thinking that way. Right. Whenever. Right. It's not like there is a default halakha. The default. Yes. There's always going to be a default setting, and then there's going to be our choice. There's no halakha d'oraisa that requires us to respect the rights of individuals in those cases. We make a choice about when to respect them and when not. If we choose to allow that, right, that's a decision. Right? The interesting thing is that in this Mishnah, we choose to allow that. Why? We don't have to. We're willing to override it when it comes to Sofrim. Right? So why aren't we willing to override it? Maybe we should be willing to override it. That's the transition, exactly the transition I want to make. Right. Yes? Question? No, that's still not a question. Okay. Okay, so now we get to Amar Rav Huna. Right, so Huna comes along and he says, "Hi Bar Mivoa, the Uki Rechaya." This is our Adam's family moment. What do you want? Right? There's an Uki Rechaya. sorry. Usually we do higher class reference, and I couldn't resist that one. Right, so, hi, Baruch Hu, the Uki Rechaya. You can
all
pronounce
it. Is it like an altogether Uki Rechaya, or just
a... Pardon?
Is it like an altogether Uki Rechaya, or just
a... There you go. Okay, so, hi, Baruch Hu, the Uki Rechaya. Uki, what? Uki, Uki, what? Rechaya. Rechaya. And, for us, the Baruch Hu, the Chavre, the Kamuki Kabe, Dinahud in Akid Vihore, Damrele Kapasakdele Latiyutin. Okay, now, there are going to be many, many alternate texts of this sugya, so we have to be very careful about assuming that any Rishon is interpreting the text that we just read. Right, there are lots of places where it can shift. But let's start as a very good. So there's Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, right, the text as we have it is that there is a bar mivoa. Okay, so now mavoi is a larger unit. Is a larger unit than a chatzer, right? And the normal way of setting it up, right, is you have a chatzer. A chatzer has a number of residents around the chatzer. The chatzer includes both houses and some kind of open space. And then between the chatzerot, there is an alleyway which is a mavoi. Right, so the bnei mavoi is a larger unit than the bnei chatzer. Up till now we're dealing with chatzer, now we're dealing with mavoi. The question is that different significant? Okay, so he comes and he is uki rechaya. So rechaya is a grindstone, and Rashi says the uki rechaya litchon viliskor. Right, to grind and to sell. What does Rashi need to do this? It's a chamir and it's a kelim. What do you think, Aminah?
There's inherent noise from grinding, and there is other noise from selling.
There's inherent noise from grinding and other noise from selling. Okay. So you think we're still on the noise issue. Chaim, what do you think?
What exactly is the selling?
Presumably he's selling the stuff he has ground.
Since when does liskor mean to sell?
You think it means to rent? Aha.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh, he can rent out the grind?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't think so, but it's very interesting. I can't.
Wait, is it not that like the people not coming by rights to the grindstone?
You think that he's selling time on his grindstone?
It doesn't necessarily have an offgiving, right?
I'm
but
sure.
It could be that like I grind wheat and sell it. I sell flour, or if I sell the rights for you to grind your wheat and make into flour, I don't know if there's really a difference.
So it's very much not what I thought. I can see very much not what I thought, but I'm open to the possibility. I thought that Rashi was telling you that that everyone has a private right to set up a grindstone for themselves.
Right.
The issue is here that you're setting up a grindstone as a commercial enterprise as opposed to as a private enterprise. But could be that your reading is right and mine is wrong.
Could it be that this thing was meant to be a mem at some point?
And what should it be?
So it would be like it should have become a leaf corn to
which would support my reading.
Right.
Interesting. That's highly speculative. I'd rather read it my way with the letter as is. Okay, but I confess I had not thought of that. I had not thought of that at all. I guess I think that if he'd read that, he wouldn't need Litton. But Inachinami. Okay, let's see where we go. So Hay Bar Mevoa, the Uki Rechaya. The Ata Bar Mevoa Chavre, okay, and then a Bar Mevoa Chavre. So, all right, Z.H., what did you think that meant, Bar Mevoa Chavre?
A fellow Bar Mevoa?
Same Mevoa or different Mevoa?
I mean, we have to figure it out at the end. I would assume at first Chavre means same Mevoa, meaning Chavre is meant to tell us same Mevoa. We'll have to figure out if by the end that all ends up.
Okay, so right now we say is there is a guy in this mavoi, and he sets up a grindstone, and now another member of the same mavoi comes after him, the Kamuki Gabe. and he sets up another grindstone near him. And they were on top of him. So presumably that the first person can object to the second person setting up the grindstone. The Amar Le Katasakta Lechiyute, because he says, you have interrupted my living. Okay, Rashi, in the middle of this, Rashi says that there's an explanation. Right, Dina Hu Dima'akev Ilave. Did I put the right Rashi in? Let's take a look. Or did I put the wrong Rashi in? Did I put it in the wrong place? Not that I put it in the wrong place, but if you caught that. So Rashi says, does Rashi say anything over here at all?
Nope.
No.
No, I put it in the wrong place. Well, my fault. Always look at fan resources. Okay, so this is our case right now. Right? So let's look at the case right now that if you have a person set up a rechaim in mavoi, so and this rechaim, this grant you set up, does anybody object to it? No one objected to it. Do they have a right to object to it? Pardon?
Maybe not. There are many people in Mavoi as opposed to the Chatzah.
Maybe there are many people in Mavoi, and so Mavoi goes by vote.
As opposed to the Chatzah, which everyone, yeah.
Where does he set it up in a Mavoi?
It says Gabay, which sounds like it's next to him.
Yeah, so where did the first person set it up?
What?
Where did the first person set up his Mavoi? In his house?
In the open space.
Or in the open space. Okay, right, so it might be that all rights of restraint, right, of restraints of the individual owner, it only says you can, right, you can object to noise in your chatzer. Your chatzer is a private space, but a mavoi is a public space, and as long as he sets it up in the public space, A, there's a right to set up a public grindstone in the public space, and B, there is no right to object to it on the grounds of noise, probably because it's a public good, or because we think that a mavoi is far enough away that, you know what, you should be able to sleep. Yes, let me know.
I'll give an opposite reading, which,
yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's necessarily right, but it could be that the first guy set up this mill in his house, the second guy put it up in the mavoi, and therefore is beating out the business because he's in a public space, whereas the other guy's inside, and therefore the chiddush of this is saying, even though the second guy is in a public space, you can stop him because he's holding back your livelihood, even though you're
okay.
Isolated in the private space.
That puts in a dramatic new factor.
I mean, we don't really know where it's built. I mean, I think it's more likely that it's in the Mavoi.
Most likely they're both in the Mavoi.
Right.
Most likely they're both in the Mavoi, and this is a claim that the first person can restrain competition. Yes, Elliot?
Yeah, Avinoam said the chiddush of this, when explaining the thing, the chiddush of this would be that private space, public space, you have a right to it. But I think it's already a huge critique here that we are allowing you to restrict competition just on the premise that competition stops people's livelihood. That to me is already a huge critique.
Right, this is a claim that that there seems to be some basis on which you can prevent competition on the grounds that you have a right to your existing income. And that seems to be the simple that there is some case in which you can effectively restrain competition on the grounds that it harms your income, and now the question is, what are the parameters of that capacity? Right? What's the basis of that capacity? Why is it limited to? Right, let's suppose we set a geographic limit on it. You can restrict what a bar mavoi chavrei does, but presumably you can't if he sets it up somewhere outside your mavoi. Is that because it doesn't really interrupt your business, or because your rights only extend to that sphere?
Or either or both.
Yes, I don't know. Right? I don't know what the grounds of this. Right? I don't know what the grounds of the right to restrict competition are, except that somehow, right, it seems to suggest that if it wasn't in fact interrupting your income, you would not be able to do this. Right? There is a right. You can't just say I don't like competition. You have to show harm. And that's what it sounds like.
Unless you
say,
you have to show harm. Or
Is it just assumed they come?
Or you have to wait. You have to claim harm.
Or to claim competition is inherently harmful.
You have to claim that. Well, okay.
You could both be making, you know, $1 million a year, and then like you can't really claim that.
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
You could have been making $2 million.
Right, you're still fine with $1 million.
Presumably, the market is too strong for one person to handle it all. So, like, we want to have multiple people with the same business.
We don't know, right? Nothing in this case tells us. Now, it could be that a Mavli is a standard size, and we know that a Mavli can only handle, right? Can only provide enough business for one miller to live adequately, right? That would put an economic fact not known. We could say that pasakula lechute only means that you can object if the person is preventing you from making a living, but if you're making enormous profits, then you can't, right? Then you can't interrupt. Right? There are lots of limited, right? This is a right? Really, all we can say from this sugya, right, is really there are two axes. One is that there is a case, according to Rav Huna, in which you can restrict competition. The grounds for that are economic, and the limits to that are geographic. I think that's the most you can say from this one statement of Rav Huna. And then we can build whole universes off that. There is a case in which there is a right by one person to prevent competition. The grounds for that right are economic, and the limits to that right are geographic.
Okay.
We don't know what they are, right? We have mavoi is some kind of thing. One hand, nechius, right? We can establish terms, right? It has to be the right. It can't go beyond the boundaries of a mavoi.
And it must be because of fears.
Why do you?
Right, unless you say good, yes.
I mean, this is just we could say this is an example, and then maybe.
Or worse, you could say it's even in a mavoi. Tell the homer in larger spaces. Right?
And
we
minimum and maximum up around the lower bound.
Right,
yeah.
We know, right? Mavoi is in the middle of a chutzner and let's say for now, mavoi is in the middle of a chutzner and a masa.
Yeah.
So when you say you can do this in a mavoi, does that mean you can do this in a mavoi, but not in a masa, and yes in a chutzner?
Right,
we can both ways. Or we can say this is the sweet spot where you can do it.
Right.
Right, you can't do it in the chutzner because you couldn't get enough business in the chutzner anyway. So obviously you're both competing, right? We can do it any way we want it. That's why I said I don't know more than that there. Right. You cannot make a claim that halakha is completely Adam Smith, and there's no right to restrain competition, because there is a case, according to Rav Huna, in which you can restrain competition. Yes?
Does that want to be extrapolated from the term Dina Hu Dima'akev and Ilya?
Dina Hu? Well, it says it's a din.
But, so, does that mean that, I just read it, it seems like extra words there.
Yes, you have to figure out. You can go look at the phrase dinahu and say, what does dina mean? Right? Is it, you know, does dina mean something like amra Torah, which means it's not true? Right? Torah didn't really say it. Or here's an expression. I don't know. What drove Rav Huna to make this statement? Is it a comment on the Mishnah? It doesn't seem to relate to the same axis as the previous case, which is dealing with scholars. So he seemed to have just moved associatively from rights of people in a shutfus to competition which is resolved on the basis of quality and public good, to competition which doesn't deal with public good at all.
I mean, also you want to ask, is this a prior restraint, or is it something that he can open up his business, but yet he's letting himself vulnerable for someone else?
Fair question, because it does say, and the other guy opens up, right? It doesn't say uvikesh chavero. So it might be that it doesn't allow prior restraint, that you have to let it happen, right? That would be a close reading. I want to emphasize that one axis that came up again is that, remember, we moved from the Mishnah, which dealt with the private rights, to the case of education, which dealt with a public good, and that, right? And the Mishnah dealt with noise, and then the education dealt with competition. So now we're still in competition, but seem to have lost the notion of public good.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe
it doesn't show up here somewhere.
Yeah,
right?
It might be implicit, right?
We could try. Yeah, that's why I set up the structure, because you could say, "Hey, what happened to public good?" But the language here doesn't say anything. Right? Doesn't say anything about public good.
Well, unless we assume that the aggregability, if you will, is implicit in all of these conversations, and we only have to bring it up when it's contrary to
could
our
be.
Traditions.
We're missing the factor of whether one person is a better grinder than another.
It could be that this is something that they know what they. As in, like, we don't understand the milling industry, and this time, right?
It could be it's a commodity, and they assume that all millers are the same.
Right.
Or it could be they're renting out the time, which case.
Or if renting out the grindstones, everyone does their own, right? And it's just, then they have to assume all grindstones are the
right.
same.
So it could be that they know for a fact whether or not increased competition in millstones is better for the
could be.
Residents of the Mavoy or worse for the residents of the Mavoy.
Could be.
And if that's an implicit in the conversation, then public, then the idea of a public good or whatever.
Could be, right? So we can read it. It's not in the text, but we can always make it a
makes
background
sense.
Assumption.
Yeah.
Right? We also have no discussion of whether two mills make more noise than one. Right? Noise has been left out. Okay.
Well, we have no idea if noise is even chiming in a Mavoy anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe noise is irrelevant in a Mavoy. Right? Because once you get in the street, there's just no way to keep the street quiet. Okay. So Gemara says, Lema Misayel. So let us say that the following text is supportive of Rav Huna's claim. Marchike mitzudat hadag min hadag, kimelo ritzat hadag. Okay, this is one of those tongue twisters. I try and say it 10 times quickly. Nor does it make any sense on the surface. Right? You keep the with the, you know, let's assume a mitzudat is a trap, not a fortress. Right, so you keep the trap of the fish away from the fish as far away as the fish can run. This is not a good strategy if you're trying to catch fish. When you're trying to catch fish, you want the trap where the fish is. Right? Not where the fish isn't. Okay, so this presumably is a text that can only make sense if you have a masur. Right? It's not a text that is intended to be read and make sense of. The problem is that we lost the Masorah. So now we're desperately trying to reconstruct what on earth this collection of words can mean. So what does this collection of words mean? So Rashi says, Tzayad shenatani nav bedag achikir koros. You have a tzayad, a hunter, who has been following this fish until he has found its hole. Marachikin sh'ar ha-tzayadin mitzudatam misham. So the other hunters, they're not really fishermen, right? Because they're actually tracking the fish, right? So the other hunter, has to keep their traps away from that hole.
You can call them trappers.
Trappers. Okay.
Seal trappers.
So I don't. You know, this is very elaborate. I do not know whether this is in fact how fishermen work. And they have to track the fish to their hole.
Unless they're talking about like a giant marlin, like what are they?
I mean, it'd be brilliant if anyone could find out which stream salmon go to mate. You. Well, she
didn't know about salmon.
I'm saying fish have pattern, right?
Deep water.
So Rashi thinks it's food, and maybe it's something like that. But if you figure out where these fish come back to mate to
these fish
for these things, whatever fish they are. I mean, if you can figure out.
He doesn't say these fish. He says the fish.
Okay, the particular fish.
Because there must be so many other fish in that water.
I feel like fish is plural.
No, I think fish is plural.
You think fish is plural?
Yeah. I mean, fish is just lavdaka. I think the singular fish is lavdaka. Meaning you track this fish and
okay, so somebody's going to have to do the work here and look up medieval fishing techniques and find out what it is that she's talking about. Do you actually track fish? The fish have holes. What kind of fish in the lake?
Well, I mean, we say in English fish
and pizza.
Yeah, that doesn't mean the whole of the fish. That means all the water fish.
No,
I think there's an area where they feed.
Yeah.
That's not a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rashi
in Masechet Yom Tov, Rashi talks about these bivarium, where you would get fish into these little areas, and from there it would be really easy to catch them.
No, it's true that you dig these little shallow ponds, and you entice fish into it. But here, Rashi's talking about you're tracking the fish, the wild fish, to his lair.
I think the chor is the little ponds that you're enticing the fish into.
Did Rashi ever go fishing?
He doesn't say enticing. He says it's a
yad.
It's choro.
Right?
And he's trying to actually hikir both.
Oh, you're saying it's his chor?
Hikir means he's looking for it, and then he finds it.
Unless you think it's some little fish recognizes his hole.
No.
Yeah, because the fish remember that this is where they get
good fishing spot.
This sounds like a rabbit story, right? Like fish hunting. That's one of the problems. Right? The imagery is rabbit hunting and not fish hunting. Rabbits who track to their hole.
Right.
Fish who stick to the right.
So all this time he thought a fish was a rabbit.
No, I think there are particular spaces where fish eat.
But that's not their whore.
Yeah, it is. I have a fishing spot that I go to, and like that's the place where I catch the fish.
That's not a horror.
That's not the place that the fish goes
okay.
to.
Okay,
yeah.
I am leaving this to those of you who are expert in this. I learned very early that Gemara teachers should not seek to go beyond their expertise in 10th grade, and I had a big fight in the interview about the Klipa Eliona of a date bunch from Taiman the Shada Pisa Ladikla. And Iran distinguished between a Klipa Eliona and a Klipa Tachtona. We had no idea what it meant, and he came in with next day all excited that this pshat was right because there's this big thing, but there's this big brown thing surrounding the dates, the cluster of dates on the tree, and that's the Klipa Eliona, and it was all glorious in the Britannica. So I looked at it and discovered that it said during the growing season, growers often surround their dates with paper. That's a lesson to learn about not going. So I don't know anything about fishing. I have gone fishing twice in my life. I've never caught anything. And
you didn't find a honey hole.
Yes, I am.
It's a little bit strange unless we say, like, chat, because it seems that we're interested not in the fact that this hunter put in all this effort and tracked the fish and now everyone's mooching off of him, but we're just like concerned that he put the food there and now it's like he already caught the fish.
Well, so let's go there in a moment, right?
So
first, let's go. Well, we have a reality. Okay, the reality Rashi claims is Dag means that if you have a person who has somehow found the place where the fish likes to hang out and he has placed the trap there, that the other hunters must put their traps away further, but they must look for holes that are a certain distance away, and that distance is a parsa, which is, someone know offhand how long a parsa is?
4 miles.
How much?
8,000 amas.
Yeah,
4 miles.
4 mil.
8,000 amas. So we're talking like 4 miles. That's a long way, right?
Yeah.
That's a really long way.
Well, are you talking about like a seal? Are you talking about like?
The question
is
like how far? Like fish swim different lengths, so I don't know how.
Could we be talking about fish in the ocean?
I don't know. There wasn't so much ocean fishing.
What, like in the Mediterranean.
On the shores, I guess.
What
would
the little hole?
Yeah, it's a metaphorical hole.
I mean,
but
no.
I can't think of anything that else where you're going to say, go 4 miles away because I'm fishing here.
I'm saying downriver. If we just downstream, right?
Four miles?
And that actually makes sense because you have huge...
It means like
in
a bay, and you
have
a huge net.
How big was the
air,
Dave?
You know,
yeah,
a
huge
net. But there's like some bay or some cove, and you already lean all of your nets.
The Gemara makes reference.
All someone has to do is lay a net that's like, it's like the same position.
Yeah,
I'm talking about this with the case of the cistern, the public water. Wait, no, I'm serious. If someone else just comes and lays a net that's like closer to the shore, or like, and they can just capture all the fish in that.
But, so Ritas Hadag, right, so we want to claim that means the rain, the eating range of a school, or something like that.
You can't tempt it away from.
Well, he didn't say anything about tempting away. You can't, right? You have to put your own mitzvah, at least a parsa away. This is really weird.
I mean, we don't really know what a mitzvah. Again, if you're gonna go with the literal reading of Rashi,
mm-hmm.
that like I'm tracking this one fish,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm gonna bait this one fish. And this fish is going to come back. This fish is going to stay within a parsa of its little, right? We have reference to like.
Why didn't say anything about bait?
I'm going to catch this fish at some point.
Yes.
Right, with some sort of mitsuda, some sort of trap, which presumably traps need bait. So fine, but I'm saying using baiting as a verb, not as a noun.
Yeah.
So I'm going to catch this fish. So now this fish is something that I have some eyes on, and no one can take it from me. And it is going to stay within a parsa of its main eating place, right? We have fish holes. The Gemara Yevamos has caves like this, right? Maybe someone will find a little cave where fish hang out. Right? There are concepts of like of fish going places, for whatever it means. I don't know.
We'll find out in a moment where fish are going places. okay, so now the claim is that this halakha supports Rav Huna's halakha. Okay, right. So Rashi says the connection between them is Alma, right? So I would think. Even though you have not formally, lozacha be, I believe, means you have not formally acquired the fish,
Lomatul yadei, and the fish is not in your physical possession. So you have neither physical nor legal possession of the fish. Nonetheless, you have the right, right, marchikin, right, which means other people have the obligation, I assume, like you could say marchikin is transitive and you can and say you can make other people move their fish away, or you can just say that there's an obligation inherent on the other parties. Mishum de amar le pasachti le lechiute. Okay, so Rashi says, right, Rashi reads the connection as claiming that in the case of the mavoif, right, so the fisher is the guy, the fisherman who finds the hole is the guy who sets up the mavoif. And who are the fish?
Customers
are the fish, or customers' money is the fish. And so you have, right, so that the customers are in their neighborhood. And even though you have not in any way acquired the customers or their money, you do not have physical possession of the customers or their money, nonetheless, if somebody else tries to catch this fish, Rashi says you can't interrupt him and say, no, you have no right, you can't catch this fish, this is my livelihood. Right? Because livelihood is a hypothetical perspective gain. Right? How can you have rights in a hypothetical, right, in a hypothetical perspective?
He says you
can. So we say, right, Rashi says, look, here's the right. So you might have thought Rav Huna was absurd, because Rav Huna was granting you a right to something that has no legal existence. The answer is no. We see that we treat the possibility of right the possibility of gain as something that can have legal right that can be legally tangible, even though you can't be mafne davar shel baliyolot. Right, put in a lucky term. Right, so this is a chiddush of Rav Huna. This chiddush requires support. That support is being provided from this private. Yes, sir.
I've said it's not quite the shul level alone, because it's a certain that once you find the lair of the fish,
it's certain.
Yeah, I mean, because the truth of fishing is fish have no bechira. So fish are just animals that act upon intuition.
And
hunters are trained.
The fish could die before you caught it. It could get eaten by a bigger fish.
And then he would catch both.
It could be enticed by a fox on the shore.
So,
well, no, it can't. Yeah, it can't.
Hey, we learned from the story that fish are too smart to be eaten.
Ah, okay. All right, we covered that one. Right, I'm not convinced.
I mean, isn't that what Rashi's saying here?
He doesn't say anything about certainty.
No, but Batuchu shall be done.
Is he saying it yet, or is he saying it?
The hunter feels a sense of certainty.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the word batuach can either mean he is certain, or means it is certain.
It is certain.
Where does Rashi say batuach?
In the next part.
In the next Rashi, the answer.
Oh, right, after we say that fish are sheep.
Okay. But let's, on the abstract level, what I want to get is that the reason Rav Huna's halacha needs a support is because it's a chiddush to say that you could have any rights to a future good. Why is right? You haven't acquired it anyway. Why should where does this right come from? So the writer doesn't tell you where it comes from. It tells you right. But Rashi believes it supports the claim that pasakti lechiyute, and pasakti lechiyute applies to a future revenue stream, right, and not to something I have already acquired. Right, that's a big chiddush. The Gemara answers, right? The answer, it's not really the answer. The Gemara rejects the raya and says you can distinguish between the case of the fish and the case of Rav Huna, and you can say that yes, we compel the fishermen to distance their traps, and that tells us nothing about telling a person that they're not allowed to set up a competing grindstone.
The grindstone is not the revenue stream.
Right?
It's not a revenue stream.
Exactly.
All right. So the Gemara says, Shani Dagim the Yahavi Sierra. So Rashi says, Nutnim Ayin Behabatam Liot Noagim Marutz Lamakam Shiro Shamazona. So fish are visual hunters.
That's true. I don't think this is true.
I have to say that much of the. All right, here we get to my favorite, in a certain sense, Rashi of all time. But it's where you get learning. Gemara
in the beginning of the Kama says that we distinguish between a keren on the chuber and a keren hatelush, right? An attached horn and a detached horn. And it's a habamigan. Right? The question is, what is a detached horn? So Rashi says a detached horn is, if I can recall correctly, the horn of the animal fell off, and it picked it up between its teeth and ran at you. That's we thought that was a puzzle there. Here's the keren hatelush. But Chanan says, no, 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 this is entirely wrong. The animal's horn fell off, and the owner glued it back up. These are hard tricks. These are hard tricks. Without the kasher, which unfortunately doesn't work well, it works. It seems to reverse the logic of the sugya, but it seems nonetheless. It seems it has to be true. Says that there's a Yerushalmi, which says that you can write a get on a keren hatelush, but not on a keren mechuber, I believe. And the distinction is that a keren hatelush is a is a horn. No, it's Yerushalmi that makes it clear that you can not but keren mechuber, keren hatelush there doesn't mean whether it's still connected to the animal or not. Right? It's also talking about two kinds of horns. In the Yerushalmi, it doesn't. The Yerushalmi says it's karnei re'im versus karnei something other. And the distinction is that a keren hatelush is a horn that grows over the bone and is removable. Where the keren mechuber, the keren mechuber is a horn that is part of the skeleton of the animal. And that is a much more reasonable distinction.
Well, like no, because no animal, I'm saying, no animal that's not always moving is going to be a heavy keren mechuber anyway. Oh, it's a keren mechuber. It's going to be a rhino
para.
And a...
Para.
It's not a para.
So Yerushalmi has distinctions between two kinds of animals. I think it's between carne rem and carne para. The Yerushalmi believes.
Yeah, also, it comes right out of all my Yerushalmi days.
So we do our best. I don't know which of these, and you're welcome at the end of the day to decide that you can paskin the sugya because you can figure out what fish really do. Or you can figure out what Chazal would have thought fish really did.
Or we can go through all the Rishonim, see all their funny.
Yeah, these are really pretty wild. So fish, right, fish like to run to the place where they see food. Therefore, since this person has recognized the fish as whole, and has put money, and has put, sorry, put... Let's put food. Bitoch malayritzitzo, batuachu, there's your line. Right? So the answer is batuachu shil kedenu. He has absolute confidence that he will catch this fish. To have a lekim on the matul yade, so it says if the fish is already in his hand, benitza chavera mazidos. Now we can turn you into a damager because you are not damaging a prospective thing, you are damaging an actual thing. But avalhacha, Misha ba es liyavo, Misha ba es lechayavo. So we're making sense until the last line. And actually, says, but here, whoever comes to you comes, whoever comes to me comes. What do you mean?
It's not that they're all going to go in one direction or another.
Sure it is. I put my rechayim up in a mavoi. Everyone's going to come to me until you entice them away. What's the difference between putting out a second mavoi and putting out a second fish trap?
But still, some people might still come to you.
Fish
yeah, so there's only one fish.
Sorry, no, people in Bahira.
No, no
fish
point
are sheep.
No, the point is that if all the fish are thinking the same way, they're all going to go towards the food, and that's one thing. But people don't necessarily all think the same.
We only
need
bread.
Really good line right now. Right, but they might have all sorts of reasons why they might go one way or another besides the first thing.
But there's only one way to go until the other guy shows up. There's only one way to go, right? I've got.
Okay, so let's say like it's a case where like it's a difference between you being. You know that's not harming your income. It's not necessarily harming your income. It's just maybe taking away. So you would only have $1 million instead of $2 million.
No, that's not what it's Rashi. Right? The distinction Rashi says is over there. I am sure I will catch the fish, but here I was right. I set up the mavoi because I was sure I would catch all the business in this mavoi.
So, right, but then now you're getting no fish as opposed to.
That's a whole new distinction, Rashi. So, yeah. So now you're saying there's only one fish again, or that really
overfishing.
No.
So Judah wants to introduce a distinction. He wants to claim that by fish, whoever is closer gets all the fish.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But you're not. But the guy in the mavoi, he might have been getting all the customers, but now he could still be getting.
So by your logic,
80% of the customers.
By your logic, it should be mutter to set up a mitzvah sadag equidistant from the fish result, just to give the fish a fair chance.
It's just as likely that they would.
Yeah, that would be fine. Right, Kim Lo raises a dog seems like a rather larger we make you go a parcel away, that doesn't seem like we're trying to give you a fair shot. That seems like we think you can't interfere at all. So you can say we just can't measure that, so we write your knowledge of it. But I think it's a lot of information to put in. It's a lot of information to put in. Okay, yes, Elliot.
I think that Rashi says a higher
word. Keep doing this, okay? I will try it. Elliot. Elliot.
I think the contrast, though, is what the command of the Matuli day when Nimsat Chaviyom is Eko, that, you know, because the fish are all there, you know you're going to get all of them, basically, and therefore it's like you're having them. But if a customer would go to his grindstone, it's a much weaker case for me to claim that he would have come to me if you had not been there.
Why?
Because maybe he wouldn't have entered the Mavodo.
So you're talking about the customers outside the Mavodo.
And just in general, you can't. It's a much harder claim. I think Rashi thinks it's a much harder claim to make. You cost me this customer than to say you cost me this.
I would have, but why does Rashi think it's a much harder claim?
Because you can't tell me that I'll get that because 5 customers went to you, I would have gotten 15 customers today instead of just.
Why not? If we're dealing with a limited geographic area, right? Everybody needs a grindstone, and everybody.
That's an assumption, though.
So if we assume, right, so there are 2 givens. A, everyone needs a grindstone. B, this is, right, everyone in the Mavoi will have to come through my Mavoi, right? Those are the 2.
Okay, but maybe on the way they go to the shuk and they get there.
There's no shuk. They're in a Mavoi, right?
But just in general in life, right, you set up a Mavoi to make money to get, because customers come through. Because customers are there. Well, customers come through.
Yeah.
If in my town there's a kosher supermarket in there, so it's not like I go there every day. So if I go next door, you can't claim, oh, he would have come to me if...
So there are 2 kinds of arguments. One argument is, well, on any given day, there's no knowledge of how much business someone will give, how much business there will be. The other argument is maybe people have free will so that, right, so people do sometimes, right, do sometimes go to the further, right? If you don't like the grinder in this going, you might go to the next Mavoi because human beings have choices, whereas fish absolutely go to the closest, right, the closest place. That's why we have angling contests and things like that, because fish always go to the closer thing, and there's no talent whatsoever other than tracking the fish. I find it implausible, realistically.
But Rashi does...
It's a reading of Rashi. Okay.
You can't say there's clear nezikin with...
Okay. It's a reading of Rashi that's plausible. I just don't know that it makes Rashi's reading of the world plausible. That fish are really mechanical, the way. I'm not convinced. Yes,
but maybe we presume that everybody has their own like smaller millstone at home, and if they wanted to, they could grind their own flour. So you're nervous. So at any given point, you never really know whether a customer would have come at all.
Okay, there's another variable, right? That there are private millstones, and so the public millstone is like if I only restaurants in the chutzner, how do I know that anyone will go out to eat? I don't know. Maybe they just won't use maybe they won't use flour at all. All right, Ellie, what do you want to say?
I think that the next words of Rashi are
yeah.
That's the bigger part. And the that's a litmus test. Is the other guy being a mazik or not? And that's a very high bar.
That's a weird part also, right? That's called mazik.
So I think that you might have to be a real damager to be a mazik. And that's only if you for sure take people away from the other guy's business. And by that's pashat by the fish. It's pashat that you're stealing in the fish. And by the case of the chedmini, everybody by the mill. It may steal customers. You may not steal customers because customers have free will and they choose whether to pay.
Okay, so you're trying again, right? So you want to introduce free will. We're trying to find some way to justify Rashi in claiming that somehow the fish is more sure than the business.
The word is mazika. And mazik is a very high test.
Okay, so let's we can play from the generally what's the last comment that I want to go on. Yes.
Right, I agree that the humans have free will, and not only that, but they come on a regular basis. So they grind their mill with me, they grind their grains in my mill today. You come and set something up tomorrow. Like, they can choose whichever one they want the next day, and they can choose whichever one they want the next day, and they can choose, right? That, like, there's no automatic going anywhere. Like, just as much as you've set up the mezzanote in the area, and they're automatically yours, the person who's coming to take them, they set out mezzanote, it's automatically going to go to them. But there's no automatic here, that because humans choose where they want to go.
I just don't believe fish are quite so automatic.
And I don't see, right, a more automatic than humans. I'm not convinced. Okay, well, I do want to point out from a legal theory perspective, right, which I think that Ellie and Yesh, a number of you are trying to point out, is that the theory perspective is that we really cannot stop you from taking away a future gain. Right, that's the given. So we have to find some way to transform this future gain into a present gain, so that we can then stop you from taking it away. Right, if we could just resolve the problem in a different legal system, we could resolve the problem by saying, what's the problem? You cut off a future revenue stream. Right, but we're not willing to do that, according to Rashi. Right, according to Rashi, the fundamental assumption is that you can never take legal action to prevent a future loss. Right, you can only take action. Right, that's what Eli calls mazik. Right, it has to actually damage you. Right, I was talking in terms of divar shel b'leolam. So the legal theory is going to have to be that we have to try any time you want an action to prevent prevent you from stopping a future gain. We have to find some way to claim that the gain has already happened. That's our legal mechanism. Right, and we have to decide how seriously we have to do that. Is this just a formality that we know whenever we want to legislate some kind of something to prevent the obstruction of a future gain, we have to say magically, oh, it's as if it already happened? Or is that a substantive principle? We really don't believe that you can do this about the future. Okay, those are two very different. Yes, Chaim.
Okay, can you repeat that?
Again, so I think there's one way, the given of the Gemara is that there is not only are you not liable for taking away somebody's future earnings, you cannot even restrain them in any way from taking away your future earnings. If I don't have it yet, then I have no rights to it at all, and I have no rights. I have no rights generated by it. Nothing, right? Nothing about the future is relevant in the present for these laws. So in order to make it present, what I do is I create a claim that this is as if it's already in the present. Right? That's it. But I'd say there are two ways to do that. One is to say this is a formality of the law because the law formerly doesn't recognize future things as existing. So whenever I wish to legislate, I'm going to have to claim it's as if it's in the present, but you don't have to take that terribly seriously. Right? It's just the formality by which I allow myself to fit into the existing legal structure. And the other possibility is genuinely substantive. Unless I can honestly say to myself, right, that this is as if it's already happened, I can't apply the law. Right, the first case you might say is a kind of legal fiction. Right, it's not really present, but we're going to pretend it is, and we don't really care what our threshold is, but who cares what our outcomes are. Right, we have a whole discussion of legal fiction, so that's what Samuel will come in. I think the classic one in British law is that London, sorry, this, that the Canary Islands are in London. Because it just turned out that there were certain things about the Admiralty law that were only allowed to apply in London. And those law, but they obviously were necessary to the Canary Islands, so rather than changing the law to say that the Admiralty law applies in London and the Canary Islands, they just think, well, for the purposes of Admiralty law, the Canary Islands are in London, something like that. Right? Now we could have all sorts of fun things. Well, what, they're really not in London? But they were, right, legally, but nobody really cared. And they could have said, they could have picked 15 places around the world that were randomly in London. Now you might have to say, why are they like in London? So somebody will come along and say, well, it's because they have lots of rats. And somebody else will come along and say, because it's foggy. Because somebody else will say, because they have a River Thames. Who cares? That's not what we're doing. It's just the formality of the law is that you can only apply this to London, so we found a way to do it. Yeah.
That's like saying that Hawaii is part of the United States. It's not a fiction.
Yeah, it's not. Location isn't a legal fiction.
No, because it's not legally. They didn't define it as legally, right? As legally, they didn't annex it to London. Right. They said that for the right, they declared it to be in London. And you can imagine, it might be, let's say, I don't remember what the, but you might say that, you know, this happens in the United States also, right? Let's suppose you have, right, it would take an act of Congress and several, right, and several constitutional conventions or whatever to declare something part of the United States. And so it only takes a majority vote to declare that something is already part of the United States. So we'll go with the thing that requires a majority vote. So it's easier to recognize, right? That's my preference is for the option that it's only a legal formality, but I can't demonstrate it. Yes.
Okay.
Well, it does seem that Rashi doesn't like the idea of normality. He's trying to make it a substantive claim.
It does sound like Rashi's trying to make it a substantive claim.
But it is not that meaningful, right? But I don't think it's that insane to say that. I don't know. I'm just picturing those giant fishing boats with, like, those huge nets. And in actuality, and the fish will, like, they open up this huge net and then...
Like Finding Nemo. Absolutely.
Like
And the reason Rashi wants to make it substantive is because if it's not substantive, then there are no grounds for distinguishing between the fishing net and the mill.
Yeah.
Right. Then the right answer should break. The Gemara seems to give a practical answer. Right. That fishing. Right. Fishing is real and right. And fishing is different than mills. And it doesn't seem to be giving the way Rashi understands it. The answer isn't. Oh, well, because we want to protect fishermen and we don't really care, and we like competition among mills. Right? Whereas if it's just a formality, that should be the answer. The answer would be inafinami. There is no difference between fishing and mills, except, sir, that we want to protect fishermen and we don't want to protect mills.
Yeah. Does that, I mean, can you go with that? Or not really?
You can, except when we do other Rishonim, and they give different distinctions, and they'll have to try and figure out, even in Rashi, how many cases does he have to accept. Right, because the next step of halacha is going to say, well, is this case more like mills or is this case more like fish? And if the cases that he thinks are more like fish get less and less probable, right, then they're going to be much harder to sustain the notion that he thinks it's a substantive claim as opposed to a formal claim.
Unless you're making a different distinction.
I don't know. I just find that's what you should look for, right? Even if you think Rashi is plausible about fish, right, but then Rashi extends it to other, if he says, oh, you know, mills. That's one thing. But if you open up a restaurant, right, then of course you can't open a competing restaurant because everyone has to come to restaurants. Right? And then he says, but not dry cleaners. Oh, but yes. Dry goods stores. The electronics store. Right? He starts making these distinctions and they get more and more arbitrary. Right? Then it'll be much harder to sustain the claim that it's substantive. So you have to look at the substantive literature and see whether they keep this distinction really in a way that you can maintain it, that there's absolute certainty and non-absolute certainty.
Yeah, unless, right, this might be the kind of case where you can keep complicating it or there's a much simpler
Could be.
Distinction.
So you have to look at later literature.
No, just like maybe at this time...
You could say Rashi meant this, but then you look at the Chuvot and then you see the way the Chuvot claimed the Pasuk according to Rashi and they mess it up.
Fishermen were discriminated against. It was not a fisherman's market. It was a miller's market.
That's right. All these possibilities. Yeah, I don't know. Let's look at the subsequent literature. Yes, Sean.
I'm wondering where the reason is carved into all of this.
Like the
Zariz and Iskar that we were talking about before. Like, at what point... Like, we were saying this is so similar to, like, even metaphor-wise to this, like, stream, and one person is already in a position there, they're expecting, you would think, to get the water first,
okay.
Right?
Good. So you're jumping. The order we're going to do is we did that sugya, now we've forgotten that sugya completely.
Okay.
Now we're going to do this sugya, right? We're going to do this sugya, and then somebody will come up with this brilliant idea, oh my goodness, maybe these two sugya have something to do with each other, even though there is no literary reference between them at all, and they seem to exist wholly independently.
Okay. I'm very good at forgetting.
Excellent. Okay, I want to. We're going to be done not later than 4, and I want to get. This is fine. This is a great combination. I'm willing to take the time, because at the end of the day, if the two things you have to have in your head cold are the last sugya and this sugya, because everything else relates to exactly your question: how do they interact with each other? So you have to know the two of them cold, and then within each sugya. Everyone's going to figure out how do you interconnect these parts. So I'm okay taking the time on it, as long as it doesn't take us more than another day. okay. So let me say, Amar le Ravina le Rava, Leimer Rafunad Amar Kirab Yehuda. Okay, so Ravina says to Rava, not let me say, yeah, maybe he is following Rabbi Yehuda. Now this is a little more dangerous, because it turns out Rabbi Yehuda is one side of a mafoket. So it's not clear whether saying he follows Rabbi Yehuda is a support for him. Look, he has a Tana who supports this ridiculous position that you can have legal action related to future earnings. Or is he saying, maybe Rav Huna only said this according to Rabbi Yehuda, and he's rejected halacha because Rabbi Yehuda is a minority position. Right? So we don't know which way he intends this. Okay, what is Rabbi Yehuda? It's not. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yachaluk, tenvanik, flayot, egozin, alutinokot. Keep showing up everywhere. Vipnei shemargilon eslof. Okay, so how did you understand this? What shouldn't you do in wine? All right, yes, Joshua.
You shouldn't give children crack wine because they'll become accustomed to it.
So you shouldn't give children Klayot Ve'gozin because it's bad for children to have Klayot Ve'gozin.
No, they'll become accustomed to it. So
yeah. Okay. Addiction is bad. Why?
This is unfair business practice.
It's unfair business practices to
addict children to your wares, or to wear to actually nothing to do with your wares, to the treats that you give out.
So putting cocaine in your soda.
Okay. Do we have any context for this?
No, this Joshua, where's this?
This comment anywhere else? This comment anywhere else? Anyone sees this
anywhere? It's an argument expanded ad absurdum.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
If I find the source, I'll email it to everybody.
It's a high
project. Yeah, it's
okay. So you should not, right? So Chanvanim should not give these things out. Rashi says Shivsky are Shkedim. Shemargila. Rashi says Lodo Etzlo. Kishavotehem Sholchin Osan Ela Chanirat Liknot Min HaChenvani. So Rashi says that what you're doing, if you give out stuff, then when kids were always sent out to do the shopping, when you send kids out to the shopping, so they'll go to the person who gives them candy. So you shouldn't give out candy, because that way the kids will come to you. Why? So Joshua introduced this phrase, unfair competition. What's unfair? Yes?
It's like, I think fish are like kids. I mean, kids are like fish.
Yeah.
Where there's no mechira, and they're very thirsty. And it's because, like, they're not thinking rationally. Like, if customers go to business A instead of business B, we assume they're making rational decisions. Whereas children, they'll come to you even though you may be selling an inferior product.
So it's because it's children.
Yeah.
So it would be fine to give out toasters to adults, right, as a classic case, so that people will come, so the adults will open bank accounts with you, and not with the other bank account, because adults are making real decisions. What you're doing with kids is you are, right, what you're doing with kids is you are cheating, because you're having people, so here is a whole bunch of axes you could distinguish. You could say it's kids, and anything that deals with kids is unfair. It's like Joe Camel, right?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to advertise to kids. We could claim that kids are like fish in some way, and trying to figure out how that makes a difference. But the really cool thing would be, what you're doing is, to me, is you are separating the incentives of the agent from the incentives of the purchaser. Right? Because what you're doing is you're saying, I am going to get the kid isn't really a real purchaser. The kid is being sent by their parents. So I'm going to bribe the agent to make decisions in their, right, to do things in their own interest, as opposed to in the interest of the other party. That might be why it's unfair. Yes, Abhi.
Is it interesting? I don't know how defensible they are with this idea. One thing that I feel like I can construct that works better is to say that perhaps this discusses a case where the person who's giving out treats to children has the cash reserves in order to give out treats to children, whereas
okay.
the competitor does not. And so that is why it could be parallel enough to say you can't pass up with what you take.
So it could be unfair competition because it could be predatory, right? It's that it does in the long run you're going to stop giving out candy too, right? So what you're doing, right? But because you can afford to lose, right? You're losing money in this candy. You're giving it away. Right, so that's cheating in business. You're giving away. It's not really, you're not cutting your prices, and if you cut it, you're not cutting your prices because you can live off the income. You're only doing this in order to drive the other person out of business.
Yes,
I mean that's it. Yeah. So what you're saying is that lust leaders would be usher.
Yes,
that's two different things.
We can say lust leaders and predatory pricing are not exactly the same thing. Want to explain why?
Because the loss leader is factored into the costs of the other goods that you're selling. Whereas predatory pricing, you actually take a loss to put the other guy in the business. So a loss leader, anyone can theoretically do. So I'm selling nuts for, giving nuts away for free, and I increase the prices of everything else in my store by $1. You can do that too. Whereas a predatory pricing is I'm selling everything in my store at a loss, putting it into business, and then I'm going to jack up the price.
Right, so the distinction, which Avi points out, is...
One requires cash reserves and one doesn't.
Yes, and so the question is how a Beit Din is supposed to evaluate that. And this actually is what hopefully the economists will come in and talk to us about, among other things, is how we, right, is
right? Because if a basin is supposed to make the decision on these grounds, so then we have to get bank statements, determine what kind of reserves you can afford, right? What about a line of credit, right? It's a very complicated thing to evaluate if we're going to make a distinction on those grounds. Yes?
I mean, the obvious knock, I mean, between the two ways you potentially explain the case of the Gemara,
mm-hmm.
ignoring the predatory thing, would be the ridiculous case of the crack wine, where I'm going to get adults addicted, and now I'm not separating the buyer's intention from his kid, because the buyer is going to come to my store because he gets the good wine here, as opposed to if it's just because kids don't have it. It's unfair to ever tempt kids to come to your store because they don't have a real... Sorry, I said the same thing twice. Basically, right, but that's the difference, right? There is this,
can you bribe adult agents in circumstances where agents are likely to be the buyers?
Not just bribe, right? Bribe in a way that is very, very unlikely to be ignored.
Okay. But this is, you know, let's say, different barbershops have different magazines. Right? So those are...
Or the ones that give you, like, a hot towel.
So what is it, you know,
some barbershops have, like, liquor cabinets that are open.
What?
Yeah. This must be one of those San Francisco things along with the broccoli pizza.
It's like
Hempstead.
In Chicago, they have to do. Yeah, it's a hipster thing. You gotta get beer and a haircut. It's like the martinis and
nails. The world is beyond my imagination. Okay. The Chachamim Atiri. Okay, so that is the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. And the way the Gemara reads this is not that, well, you could have said Lema Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rabbi Yehuda, meaning that Rabbi Yehuda obviously fits this way in the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan are unclear. The Gemara seems to assume at the outset that the intent of saying Lema Rabbi Yehuda means that Rabbi Yehuda makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda but opposes the Rabbanan. The reason the Rabbanan permit this is because they reject Rav Huna's position. That's the Gemara's Havamit.
Sorry, can you say
that? Again, the Gemara's Havamit at this point is, right, seems to be, because the Gemara has to answer and say, Afilu Tim Rabbanan. So the Gemara's Havamit is that when we said that, when
Ravina.
When Ravina said, Lema Rav Huna ki Rav Yehuda, what he meant was that Rav Huna's only following Rav Yehuda, and the Rabbanan rejected. Right? So the Gemara thinks at this point we've established that Rav Huna's position is only viable according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the reason the Rabbanan permit this kind of thing is that the Rabbanan reject the whole notion of any legal application to the future. Right? That's what otherwise.
Or
of any limit on competition. Right? I guess that's right. Two ways of doing it. You can say the Rabbanan reject all limits.
This is not like future here, like you.
Well, you're talking about future business, right? The easiest way of conceiving it is when I give out Gozi and Shkedim, I am depriving the other store of business he would otherwise have, and right, he's allowed to restrain that.
Yeah.
The answer is no. Well, so what?
Right.
You don't have the customers yet. Right? That's not about competition. That's about future. You could say instead it's just
but
about.
But if you take advantage as agent, these were people who were supposed to be your customers, like at this time. So it's not really future loss. It's just unfair competition.
Well, Rashi says Shemar Gilam Eslam because they'll come back next time, right? So I think Rashi is very really framing it about the future, and he says that, right? And he says that the Rabbanan reject this because so what? When I'm depriving, so next time the kid will come to my store instead of yours. You have no right to have the kid come to your store. To which the response is no. Maybe the Rabbanan don't disagree that far because the Rabbanan say no. The only reason we have. The reason we allow it here is not because we reject the notion that you can be restrained. It's that here, there's no reason for restraint because you can compete. Right? You could hand out better stuff. Now, that's a little iffy because you can hand out better stuff. That still costs.
Is trading meant to be better?
Yeah, I think that's the answer. You give out these things, I'll give out better stuff. I think that's how most people take it.
Not just something different,
I think. Because regularly you just say, give out the same stuff. So he got them used to it, so you give out better stuff, they'll get used to you. So here it sounds like the Rabbanan are saying, now there's no question that by engaging in this competition, he is harming you because he's forcing you he's forcing you to engage in a new cost. Right? The business is going to end up in the exact same place. Right? But before, you got this business without spending money on candy. Now you are getting, now you are spending money on candy. Right, yes?
But like the fact that it's forcing you to buy more candy, I guess...
Not to buy it, to give away more candy.
To give away more candy. I mean, or get, to give away better candy. I mean, he is forcing you to buy candy because before
yes.
he didn't even need to do that. So are you saying that that doesn't pass the threshold of Mazik?
So now we don't know. Right. So it sounds like that doesn't meet the threshold of Mazik. And So the claim right now is, the Gemara says, you're right. The giving out candy is just like putting out a fish, right? Putting out a fish trap close to the other guy's fish trap. But it's okay because you can move your fish trap closer. Right? That's what it sounds like, right? You can move your fish trap closer. Right, yes, Avino.
If it were hypothetically possible to put both fish traps in the exact same place, it would be the same.
Yes. That's what we talked about, right? Why do I want equidistant? That's why the case is very hard. But it sounds like that's now the question is, why is it different? Because right, he's causing you a loss. Why is it okay to force him to spend the money on candy? That's the thing you want to jump to if you're a free market person is because it's competition and lower prices for everybody. But the truth is, this probably won't lower prices because the cost of the candy, as Tova pointed out, will just be amortized in higher prices of everything else. And the more people put money into candy, right, assuming that they have some kind of right, they have some kind of fixed right fixed goal, and there isn't outside competition, they're gonna raise prices and everything else, and all that's gonna happen is parents are gonna pay for the candy through their other goods.
That's fine. That's still competition.
It is, but it's not competition that benefits the consumer anyway.
Well, that was a conciliation problem that you started with. That's a different problem.
But at best, you break even.
Who breaks even?
The community breaks even.
Right? Yeah, this but then with the principle, then you're back to the original problem that you set out. The problem is not about competition at any rate. The problem is that you're capturing the child who is the principal agent who does not have the same interest in mind as the parent.
So we can resolve the problem, right? What I want to point out is I want to raise and reject the possibility that the Gemara is here endorsing competition because competition is good for the market. It's good. They already have competition. There are two sellers.
Right.
At the end of the day, there's still going to be two sellers. All that's happening through this competition is that the money is going from the goods desired by the adults to the goods desired by the children.
Right, and there's an opportunity cost to all the people selling things having to spend money to satisfy themselves.
Right, this is not a public good.
They're just competing and offering something different, right? Instead
right.
of usually be competing in price, here they're competing in nuts.
But this is not a public, they're not improving quality.
But I'm not sure if that's what you can make that moral claim, though. The kids think that they're improving quality.
Yes.
Now kids get
so that, that, would be interesting, that would be an interesting claim to say that Chazal decided that the interests of children are good enough, right? That actually we see it as a public good for children to get more candy, even if thereby, right, even thereby families have to spend more on flour.
You don't have to think that.
Why not?
The point is just you can engage in whatever business practices.
Okay, or we could say that not the competition we could say the competition is in principle a good and evil. This competition is not a good. But we say lo plug, we don't distinguish, or we could say that you know actually the point is that we don't think about competition as a good or not good. We only care about rights, and the issue is do you have a right to restrain competition? We have no interest in competition. The question is do you have a right to restrain competition? So the answer is you only have a right to restrain unfair competition.
Yeah.
Right. We're fine. Where we recognize the competition is not in the public good, but we move. Let's forget this notion of the public good. We're only interested in private goods. So the question is, does your private good of not having to spend money on candy, right, is that sufficient to override his private freedom to spend money on candy? And the answer is no. Yes, Fang.
I'm not sure that we have a complete picture here of what their abundance argument is. Maybe their argument is that once you start giving out these sweets, you'll get people to buy other stuff in the store, and both sides will benefit.
Okay, so what you want to say is that my economic analysis is wrong, and actually the Chachamim's theory is that in fact this will increase business for everybody, or some notion like that. Right, so we have three. Right, so you have a whole set of different ways in which you can explain this case. One is that what matters, one is it's only a matter of private rights, and there's a default setting. There's a default setting of freedom. And in order to restrain competition, I have to claim damage on the level of mazik. In order to claim damage on the level of mazik, I have to claim that it was unpreventable damage. And if there's something I can do to prevent the damage, even if it costs me something, that doesn't prevent me, that doesn't give me a right to restrain the other party. Now you have other notions which claim that it's some kind of public good distinction. And in this case, we think the competition is really good, or we can claim that the competition is good for some people and bad for others, and that's not enough. That's not enough to generate restraint, even though an overall public good would be. Right, those are all possibilities. Yes, Yesh, what do you want to say?
I want to say, if you want to say something radically different, that we're not talking about these global theories. This is talking something very private. Rabbi Huda is not saying something's usher. Rabbi Huda is saying lo yichalichem vani chayas v'gozim tinogos. It's not nice, right? The lashon of lo is not an usher. It's not a you can stop him, right?
Yeah.
It's not a he can be ma'akev. It's a don't do it.
So how did that connect to Rabbi Huda then?
So the lema ki Rabbi Huda is saying that he's saying in line with Rabbi Huda that it's not proper. Rabbi Huda took it a step farther. Rabbi Huda thought this type of practice is something that shouldn't be done with chila. Rav Huna thought that maybe I can actually sue for it. It's not a lema kimoso, it's a lema kishitasu.
Okay.
His general theory that such a thing is not proper.
Could be. That's kind of a weak thing we're saying that even, we're damning Rav Huna with faint rayos. Right? That the best he can do is be sort of like the shita of one, of the minority position.
It doesn't matter because we reject it anyway, right? So the original thought's not meaning we thought he's sort of like this. A, he's not like it anyway. Meaning we attempt to support him, and we attempt to support him with a bad raya anyway. So we're making the bad support
okay,
a little worse.
Okay, if you
want to
make
matter.
That claim, I can't read it on the other hand, and you're going to claim that the Nafkamina is going to be going to claim that there's no Tana who ever supports restraint on competition. Because even Rav Yehuda only thinks it's not nice to do it.
You mean there's no Tana who ever supports
restraint on competition at all?
There is no Tana in this brisa who supports legally
restraining competition. So that'll get you Adam Smith back.
Okay.
Okay. It's 4:00. We should stop. So we will tomorrow. We will pick up with the first mitzvah.